Anyway, this is Joe. Let's give him a warm Valley Group welcome.
Hi, folks. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to participate in the meeting tonight. I'd like to tell you that my home group is the Monday night men's stag meeting on that meets at the PPAV hall over there on Main Street on Monday nights. And my sobriety date is February 1st, 1983. Thank you. And I tell you that for this reason. I think the most important thing and prudent thing that you can do in Alcoholics Anonymous is belong to a home group. That's where your voice is heard. That's where your vote is heard. And you get to hang out with a lot of nice people. And I tell you my sobriety date because I can't take credit for any of it. I owe it all to meetings like this. I owe it all to members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe it to the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I owe it to a loving God who I trust very much. When Bill asked if I'd participate in this, I was prepared to come down and give you a spiritual rejuvenation. But then he wrote me back and said that he would like me to talk about the 12 steps and sponsorship. And I wrote him back. I said, I don't know anything about that shit. When I was in Princeton taking public speaking lessons, they said that any time you speak to a group, you should loosen them up by telling them a funny story. And I have one about an old drunk who was walking along the beach one day and found a magic lamp. And he rubbed it and the genie popped out. And the genie says, you have 3 wishes. What would you like? So the old drunk thought a little while and he said, I would like a bottle of whiskey that never goes empty. And the genie said, what? He said, I would like a bottomless bottle of whiskey. And he said, okay. So pop. So the old drunk took a big drink of it and it went down the field right back up. Boy, he loved it. Took another big drink, filled right back up. And the genie says, well, you have 2 more wishes. What would you like? And he thought for a little while and he said, give me 2 more of these. I got sober in Ontario, California, at the VA hospital down there. They had a working man's group that I participated in. And I moved up here with a little over 3 years sobriety. I bought 10 acres of walnuts out in Woodlake. And I was going to make a fortune on those walnuts and retire. And I went broke in about 9 months. So I had to go back to work. I'm a carpenter. And I met a fella out there, Mike Rivas. He's gone now, but Mike knows him. And he worked with a lot of people out there, especially a lot of the gang members, a lot of young people. And I got to tag along with him, and he became my sponsor. And he ramrodded me, railroaded me into becoming a GSR of the Woodlake Foothill meeting out there. We met in the Catholic Church at the time. And from there, I became DCM of Tulare County. These initials might not mean a lot right now, but that's district committee member. We just chaired. I just chaired the GSRs in the district. I moved on up to the area. There's a 92 areas in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's more than that now. I'm sorry. There was 92 when I was a delegate. There was five in California at the time. I think there's seven in California now. But I served as the alternate chairperson for 2 years. I served as a chairperson for 2 years. I served as alternate delegate for 2 years. And then I was fortunate enough to serve as a delegate of Area 7 for 2 years. And that just entails a lot of traveling I want to tell you that the rewards were a lot greater than the effort. It really was. But at the conference in New York, the first year I was elected to chair the literature committee the following year in 97. And we were the committee that recommended the fourth edition of the big book to the fellowship. And it was time because the third edition was like 26 years old. So, and all it entailed was getting new stories and all that. But I'd like to talk to you about service for a little while. But I'd like to touch on the 12 steps first because... And folks, this is just my opinion. Anything I say tonight is just my opinion and just stuff that I've heard in these meetings. I remember one time I was given a pitch at a district, and I told the group, if everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous supported the birthday club, that is, you send a dollar to the General Service Office in New York for every year you're sober. If everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous did that, our literature would be free. Because, quite honestly, literature pays the bills in Alcoholics Anonymous. So in their newsletter the following month, whoever wrote the newsletter said, Joe Burns, our delegate, said if everybody supported the birthday club, we wouldn't have to pass a hat anymore. I don't know how you're going to pay the bills if you don't pass the hat. See, so anyway, I think my favorite step, the one that I like to talk about the most, is the second step. Because the first step was real easy. I mean, I was a mess when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was beat. I'd had all I could take. I was done. And that second step I thought was easy until I was sober a little while and reflected back on it. But I firmly believe that I was insane when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I found a loving God and I started trusting Him, that is, letting Him run the show, I realized how insane I really was. And then, of course, the third step was, you know, just turning it over to Him and trying to stay out of the way. My days today are as comfortable as I allow them to be. You know, the fourth step, you know, our literature tells us, having taken the third step, move immediately to the fourth step. So you start writing it down. You hear people say, oh, I didn't do a good enough fourth step, and my sponsor wants me to do another fourth step. And, you know, I'm of the contention, guys, that you don't have to do a 200-page fourth step. But a fourth step is very prudent if you want to feel a lot better. Now, if you know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, back in Akron, Dr. Bob and Sister Ignatia, Dr. Bob firmly believed in hospitalizing those drunks. But, I mean, they were drunks. And he really liked getting them into bed. And if you know the history of his family, he would bring home drunks to his house, and he would make his son and daughter sleep on the couch and give those drunks their beds. But they would have them old drunks in there 5 or 6 days, and they would set them up on the side of the bed, and they would walk through those first 7 steps right there in the bed. I mean, they would just do a 4-step on the back of an envelope. That's why they gave us the 10th step, because we can always take that daily inventory, write it down, look at it, share it with somebody, and get rid of it. I don't know why this program works. I mean, that book was written by 100 people with less than 4 years sobriety. And it was quite a deal between the New York groups and the Akron groups getting it pinned down, but they finally did. And we haven't changed a word of it since 1939, and it's still getting people sober. It's quite a deal. I saw the first big book back there when Bill and Lois's home back there is called Stepping Stones. And they have the first edition big book in a glass case. And the damn thing is probably 4.5 or 5 inches high. And Bill dedicated it to Lois. And on a paper there he had written, we put it on extra thick paper so that they would think they were getting a good deal. So Bill ran a con on us right from the start. Say, hey, look at this big fat book for $2, you know. So but it's that home that they have back there or had was given to Bill and Lois by a grateful parent whose son got sober through Alcoholics Anonymous, and she owned the house. And Bill and Lois said they couldn't take it as a gift, but they paid a small pittance for it. And if you ever get back there, there's some good history on those walls. There really is. Bill's little shack up there where he wrote the traditions is called the Wits End. It has a big picture window that overlooks the valley there. And he's got cigarette burns all up and down the desk there where he was penning the 12 traditions. His secretary at the time and the Wilson secretary for over 40 years, she was our first archivist in Alcoholics Anonymous. Her name was Nell Wang. She has a book out with Hazelden University. It's called Grateful to Have Been There. It's not AA literature, it's not AA approved literature, but I guarantee you, if you read it, you will love it, and you will learn a lot more about Alcoholics Anonymous, because she was with the Wilsons for over 40 years. And Hazelden puts out a lot of literature. They have a book on Evie Thatcher, Bill's childhood friend, who carried a message to Bill through the Oxford groups. The Oxford groups had the six absolutes. And that's where the 12 steps were pinned off of those six absolutes. But anyway, I don't want to bore you guys. I come from a real large family. I had my mom had 8 siblings, my dad had 8 siblings, and all of them had about 5 kids. So every time we got together, we were from Rock Island, Illinois, out in the country back there. Every time we got together, there was always a lot of booze and partying and usually a lot of fighting. I don't remember the first time I took a drink. It was at one of those functions, I'm sure. But I was always a happy drunk. I joined the Marine Corps. I was 17 years old because I was so happy. I got in a lot of trouble, and they told me they would be happy if I left. So I joined the Marine Corps. I turned 18 in boot camp. 2 years later, they shipped me to Iwakuni, Japan. I just turned 20, and the drinking age in Japan, lo and behold, was 20 years old. And I had just made corporal, so in order to stay out all night, you had to be at least a corporal. So, I was living large, I really was. They sent me down to Vietnam in 1965, in July of 65. My younger brother, who is also a member of the fellowship, still accuses me of starting a war. And I might have, I don't know. But I came back and I functioned a lot in a blackout, I really did. I had a brother-in-law who was on the LAPD, and I had a get-well card from him. And I still tell him if it wasn't for him, I would have got sober a lot sooner. And he got me out of a lot of scrapes. I've been stabbed twice. I've been shot at once. And I've been through 2 windshields. So tell me there's not a loving God. You know, I mean, it's just a matter of letting him into your life and trusting him. Anyway, getting back to the 12 steps, they were penned from the six absolutes from the Oxford groups. Now, Evie Thatcher, Bill's childhood buddy, I was always under the impression that he died drunk, but he didn't. He died sober. He was in Texas. His girlfriend got killed, and he got drunk, and Bill sent for him again and took him to a home up there in upper New York, and he died there and sober. I'm telling you guys all this because AA, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous is astounding to me. It really is. It's how the hell can I stay sober by talking to another drunk? How's that work? You know, when Bill and Bob went in that parlor, Henrietta Seiberling, she has a book at Hazelden too. It's called Women of Alcoholics Anonymous or AA Women, but it's the women who she was a non-alcoholic but she was real functional in getting Bob in that parlor with Bill that Mother's Day, and Bob said, "Well, I have 10-15 minutes," and they spent the whole day in there talking. And, you know, nobody knew what they were talking about. But it took Dr. Bob another 30 days to get sober. He was a doctor, a proctologist, I believe, and he had taken off for New York and came back, and Bill and Mary met him at the train station, gave him a beer. He operated on a guy that next morning and never took another drink. So the Akron groups, the King School group is where Dr. Bob first got started. It's still going on. It's not in King School anymore, but the group is still there. They used to read from Sermon on the Mount. They used to read from the Bible. They didn't know what was going to work, but a lot of people hung around listening to them. Don't throw anything at me, Bob. I'm thinking. I'm not in a blackout yet. When I first got sober in Ontario, there was a guy there named Andy in the meetings. And Andy used to say, if it takes you 5 years to work one step and you don't drink between steps, you're guaranteed 60 years sobriety. Yeah? That's pretty good stuff, huh? Some guy in the back of the room, I remember, said, "Yeah, and you'll be a miserable son of a bitch for 60 years, too." But I asked Andy to sponsor me because it was for that reason, because I really wasn't interested in all this stuff that these service guys talk about, you know what I mean? I just wanted to get the monkey off my back. I was tired. I'd had enough. It lasted about 3 months with Andy. I remember I came home after a bad day, and I wanted to go beat up my boss, and Andy wanted to drive me down there. So I didn't think that was a good idea. So I started looking for another sponsor, and his name, I found him. He was a little Armenian guy named David Haratunian. He's probably about 5'4", 5'5". He would walk in a room, I swear, every guy in there would line up to go shake his hand, and every girl in there would run up and hug him, and I said, "Man, I want this, I want this, you know." So I got them together one night, and we went out and had a cup of coffee, and I asked him to sponsor me. But you know, when he started talking about his past, the guy was a lunatic. Some of the stuff he did in sobriety, he really was. You could only imagine some of the stuff he did. But him and I worked good together. He believed in AA literature. We read out of the 24-hour day book, one day at a time. We read out of the Living Sober book. We read out of the Big Book. And we'd just sit around and we'd read that stuff and talk. Just talk. And it was really, really an experience. And I owe David a great deal, and I miss him. I wish he was still around. But what I'm telling you, the message I would like to give you is, if you got 15 days sober, and I would like to congratulate everybody that came up here. I had 15 days sober one time. Everybody in here had 15 days sober one time. I met Mike down here back in 87, I guess it was, huh? And I've known him ever since. I could tell you stories about him and the old Sailor Ken and Bill Lindenberg and Tom Cartwright and Mike Rivas. I mean, it was just good Alcoholics Anonymous at work. Stay with it. You know, it's... Oh, my Uncle Dave, I used to call him from Houston, Texas. Boy, I love that guy. He told me one time, he says, "Joe, keep coming back. We need you, and you need us." And right there was a loving God speaking to another member of Alcoholics Anonymous through a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It really is, guys. Just I could give you some good drunk logs, but I can't think of one. I don't know why, really. But I tell my home group over there, we have a few guys that say, I don't work a perfect AA program, and I tell them I do. I work in a perfect AA program because I don't drink. I have found a loving God that I trust. I hang out with winners. I stay on the sunny side of the street, and I laugh. That's the potion right there, guys. Our promises tell us we won't regret the past. We won't close the door on it. We'll know a new freedom. We'll comprehend the word serenity, and we'll know peace. Trust what you're reading, really. We all have regrets. At least I do from my past. And the ones that hurt the most are the ones where I had a choice and I made the wrong one. But I live with it. That's heavy, huh? I have a wife of 52 years. I thank God for her every day. I still introduce her as my first wife. And I tried everything imaginable to sabotage that marriage. I could only tell you some of the stuff I used to do. And my sponsor told me after I got sober, he said that, you know what? He said, God had his hand on her shoulder and said, "Hang in there, honey. Help's on the way." And that's all from you guys, really. That's all from the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill and Lois, after Dr. Bob died, Bill's ego was so big that he had to create the Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and we have the 12 concepts of world service. That's the trustees that run the fellowship. And anybody that doesn't think AA isn't organized needs to go take a trip to New York. I'd go there anyway just to go through the grapevine and just tour the offices back there. Our general manager now is her and I were delegates together. She was from the state of Washington, and she's the general manager now. I met a gal back there at one of the meetings. She was from Georgia, and she told a story of her adult daughter who was on the streets of Atlanta, walking the streets and homeless, and then she told the story of her 15-year-old granddaughter who was walking the streets of Atlanta, drunk and homeless. And she was in New York, and she just glowed, just a beautiful woman. But you could see the hurt, or you could hear the hurt. But she said that she had to let her go. And she said that her daughter came home one day, and she had all her stuff, and I think she said 6 trash bags out on the porch, and told her, "You are no longer welcome in my house. You are no longer welcome in my life. And if I never see you again before you die, I want you to know that I love you more than anything in the world." That daughter today, or 10 years ago, was a drug and alcohol counselor. She said that her mother, when she did that, when she closed that front door in her face, her initial reaction, "Well, I'll show that bitch. I don't need her. I don't need her house." And she said it made a survivor out of her. She had to learn to live on the streets. She had to learn to stay alive. And then she found Alcoholics Anonymous. Hung out with the right people, started going back to school. Getting things right. It's not easy, folks. It really isn't. I still think stupid. I had a... My guys verify this. I had a backhoe in my backyard. I don't know. It's a tractor with an arm on the back that digs trenches. And I had this guy staying in my house for a weekend. I went over to the coast and I asked him to stay there to feed the animals. My neighbor called me Sunday morning and said, "Joe, some drunk guy just drove a tractor into your pond." I have a pond out front. I said, "What?" I didn't know the key was in it. But I got home, and it was dark when I got home. But he had, I had some weeds out there that I had mentioned to him that I'd like to get that backhoe and dig those out of there. And he drove that damn thing right in there. And I was so mad when I saw it that I wouldn't talk to my wife. I just sat down on the front porch and I lit a cigar. And I just sat there. And I'm in construction. I'm building a hotel. I had the footings dug. And I started thinking, how can I kill this guy and get him in one of them footings? I was that mad, guys. If I could have thought of a way I could put him in the trunk of my car, or someone drove out there and got him covered up before we poured concrete, I might have done it. I don't know. But then after sitting down, cooling off a bit, I just realized, you know, that's what it is. It's just like principles before personalities. You know, what you think of me is none of my business. Really. Nobody knows what you have in your heart except you and God. That's it. You can run a con on me all you want, you know. And if you're a good alcoholic, you're good at cons. I heard a guy say one time, I'm not here because of the amount I drank. I'm here because of what I did under the influence of it. And that made sense to me, but I have been a liar as long as I can remember. Even as a kid, I could lie to you. I can still look you right in the eye and lie to you without any thought process at all. Just lie my head off. But I recognize it today, and I'll usually make amends for it right away. I heard a guy say one time that my mind is like a school bus full of kids, all of them wanting to drive. Now, I know a bunch of you can relate to that, because that little guy up there running around telling you what to do, and then he's over here telling you what to do, and then you're going to tell him what to do. Trust God, guys. Really, it's a good ride. I was up and down this state for the better part of 12 years, and I was usually gone every weekend. And I met a lot of nice people. Anyway, I was going to tell you about Nell Wang. When I was back there in New York, I had dinner with her, and she autographed a book for me. And she told a lot of stories about Bill and Lois. And really, guys, if learn the history of this fellowship, really. You'll love it. It's some of the hardships that those early groups went through. It's crazy that they stayed around. It really is. I could sit with you and talk about it for hours. I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the people that made the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I met the first delegate from California. I met the first delegate from Washington. There were delegates in 1950 and 1952. Jim Masterson from California and Eric Bergman from Washington. They used to call me Kid. I went out to dinner with them when I was like 8 months sober, and they were talking about Bill falling asleep on the couch in the general service office and some of the stuff they used to do back in the day. I could sit and listen to it for hours. I really could. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was having a relationship at the time. We called them affairs back then, but we call them relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I still think about it today, and it just really kicks my butt sometimes. But then I have to go back to our literature, and I have to think that there was a reason that stuff happened. And relationships hurt as much sober as they do when you're drunk. People ask me what I do for fun if I don't drink. And I just tell them I do what I always do, but now I remember it. Guy told me one time he knew he was a drunk because he drank a 12-pack every weekend. I said, hell, I used to drink a 12-pack trying to get the front door open. I was a knockdown sling. I would go on a 3 or 4 day drunk and I wouldn't change clothes or brush my teeth or take a shower. And I thought I was a good looking man. Boy, I'd be up asking girls to dance and they'd say, well, nah, not right now. And I couldn't understand why they wouldn't want to dance with a handsome son of a bitch like me. That was it, guys. It was just the way you think, the way that King alcohol makes you think, and the things you do under the influence of it, is just mind-boggling sometimes. I worked with a guy for about 9 months. Heck, we had, this was down south, and we had a real good relationship, and he called me one Sunday morning and asked if he could come over, and I said, sure. And he said, well, I want to tell you I got drunk last night. I said, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't come over. And he said, well, why not? And I said, well, I think this phone call should have been on the other side of that drunk. I said, evidently something between me and you aren't clicking. So you should probably find somebody else. And I don't know if that was tough love or not. And I was upset a little bit because how could he do that to me? You know, I was his sponsor. How could he get drunk? But that's the disease, guys. That's the nature of the disease. I sure wish I could think of a funny story. I do have a funny story, and then I'm going to close.
Is that okay? Oh, where'd you go?
Okay. We had a judge here in town back in, was it 90? What was his name, Mike? He called himself your judicial alcoholic. He was Bob. Yeah.
Bob V.
Bob V. Yeah. He had a Corvette, and he was in and out of the program for, you know, he'd be in 30 days and go back out. This was one of those times when he was sober for a couple months, and he went out and got drunk. And he had a Corvette, and he went out and sat in his Corvette, and he passed out. And when he came to, he had thrown up all over himself. And it was raining outside, and so he brushed himself off as good as he could, and he went home, and his wife saw him and says, what happened to you? And he said, well, that's a long story. He said, but I was driving home, I saw a guy hitchhiking, it was raining, so I stopped and picked him up, and he said, as soon as he got in the car, I could smell him. I knew he'd been drinking. And I don't know what it was, but as soon as the heat hit him or something, he just threw up all over me. His wife says, well, what'd you do? He said, I turned around, took him down to the county jail and told him to keep him for the night, and I'd see him tomorrow morning. So Bob said he got out of bed real early and got dressed and went down, and before his wife got up and drove to work, and his wife called him at work and said, Bob, have you seen that guy you picked up last night? And he said, no, I haven't seen him yet, but I got his docking slip right here on my desk. And she said, well, what do you think you're going to do to him? And he said, I should probably give him at least 30 days. And his wife says, well, I don't know about that. She said, I think I'd give him more than that. And he said, you would? Why? And she said, well, he not only threw up all over you, he's shitting your pants too. Now that's a good alcoholic right there. So I will leave that as the evangelical part of the pitch tonight. I want to tell you about when my mother passed away back in 1990. I was sober about 7 years, and we flew back to Illinois. This was before cell phones and all that, and we had learned just before we left the airport that she had passed away. When the plane got off the ground, I remember smiling. I had a big smile because she was in pretty bad shape. She had breast cancer and heart disease, and she had been hurting for a long time. And I knew that the pain had stopped. But the most important thing was I knew that because of a loving God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to make amends to that woman. And when I did, it wasn't pretty because she let me have it pretty good. And she told me about every bad thing I ever did. But when it was all over, we sat there and we cried together and we got up and we hugged and we kissed. And she was counting my sobriety days from Illinois. She was counting how long I was sober out here in California. So I thank God for that. But when we got back there, I was telling you about that big family we had. I had a cousin call me and said, "Joe, I'd like to extend an invitation." And I said, "Well, Dale," I said, "I don't know how long I'm going to be back here, buddy." I said, "I'd like to come and spend some time with you." He said, No. He said, "Your mom told me you were an alcoholic." And he said, "I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to take you to a meeting." I said, "That sounds good, Dale." I said, "But why don't you wait until tomorrow night? That's when my younger brother was flying in." I said, "When Buster gets here, we'll all go together." And he said, "Okay." So the next night, Dale comes out and gets us. Me and Buster jump in the car, and we got another cousin named Larry. He said, "Where are you guys going?" He said, "Oh, we're just going to town for a while. My mom lived out in the country." He said, "You bastards are going to an AA meeting." He said, "I'm going with you. I've been sober for a year." So the four of us jumped in the car, and it was a speaker meeting. And it was above an auto parts store. And when they asked for visitors, we raised our hand and we told them why we were there. And the speaker said, "Well, I'm not talking. We're going to have an AA meeting instead." So they let all four of us give a pitch about my mom, you know, how we were feeling, what our thoughts were. And then they gave a, you know, it was a participation meeting. After the meeting, this little woman was, heck, she wasn't 5'4". She came up and she just cut my face in her hands like this. And she said, "Young fella, you believe, can you believe how happy your mother must be sitting up there in heaven looking down on you and knowing that you're sober and you don't have to go drink because she passed away?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, I do realize how happy she is." And right there it was again, a loving God speaking to another member of Alcoholics Anonymous through a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to leave you the way Bill used to end all of his pitches. He said, "May God bless all of you and Alcoholics Anonymous forever. And if you, any of you have anything that you would like to know about service or sponsorship, or just want to come and have a cup of coffee with me, I'd be glad to give you my phone number." And thank you for allowing me to be here.